Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with our subject on substance this morning. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church, Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America. And thank you all for joining us today. Well, we'll start with our morning prayer.
Yeah, I have some excerpts from page 49 and 50 of Divinity Course and General Collectania, the Blue Book. No aggressive mortal suggestion can cause me to forget my duty to God, to our leader, or to mankind. Mind is unlimited in its source and supply. Man's substance is in mind and cannot be impoverished. There is no poverty, no lack. Fear is no part of consciousness. Consciousness is cognizant only of the things of God good. There is no reality in discord. God's child cannot suffer and be unhappy, because God is the only power, and He never made anything but love and peace. I am exempt from want, loss, lack, or limitation of any kind. There is no material resistance that can limit me. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. Mary B. Kennedy.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Florence. Okay, the watching point.
Watch number 129. Watch lest you misunderstand the scientific process of eliminating matter and destroying the objects of sense. Realize that things appear to be material only because we have mistaken effect for cause and placed life in substance and intelligence outside of ourselves as something apart from mind. When we learn the error of matter, we are liable to believe that God calls upon us to despise it. Thus, we find students hating their bodies, hating money, hating their food, feeling that it is a mockery to have to fuss with matter so much. As a matter of fact, we should love money, love food, love our bodies as channels for God's spiritual ideas, and realize that it is only a lie that tells us that they are material or channels for mortal mind. It is this lie that we are to hate and to destroy. When we love money, for instance, we are never to admit that it has passed from the realm of cause as an idea of substance down into effect or shadow. Our task is to withdraw from the objects of sense all belief of life, truth, intelligence, and substance in order to give these qualities back to mind where they belong. Then we can see all things in creation as symbols pointing to God, with God back of them. The objects of sense will then disappear as matter, and God's spiritual ideas will appear.
Thank you. Any comments on that?
Well, I read recently in, I think it was the 1936 primary class of Bignell Young, where he said that everything we see, everything that appears before us, it's all effect. It's not, none of it's cause. And I thought, wow, that's really true. We confuse sometimes. We think that what we're seeing is can be a cause of one thing or another, but they're all effect pointing back to God. And I just love that statement.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, I love this watching point. It's a very clarifying statement that Gilbert Carpenter has made here, because there's been so much misinterpretation and misunderstanding as to what matter is, or what spirit is, or what God and his idea are. I mean, God cares for us. And because he cares for us, he gives us the opportunities, the things that we need, you know, the food, the clothing, the money, and the opportunity to be his expression and to live as he does. I remember years ago hearing someone who had a very wrong concept of things saying that we should not eat oranges because they have vitamin C, and vitamin C should come from God. Well, I heard somebody else explain, well, where do you think the oranges came from? This is an expression of God caring for you. And so it is. And that's the truth of it all. So I'm so grateful for that watching point.
Well, I will say somewhere, you know, I got caught up in this, and I don't know how, but I thought matter was something wrong or something to get rid of. It was very disturbing. I mean, that's like an annihilation in a way. It's not Christian Science, but and I don't know where I got that from, really. I don't remember it being so much taught, but I do know that I have heard since that there are these two schools of thought. We've talked about them before. One of them is Kimball. Kimball was taught by Mrs. Eddy, and this is what she says about it. You know, that it's not like you don't have a stomach. It's a stomach is a spiritual idea, and there's only one, and it is a spiritual idea. While there is this other, and I forget the name of the other school of thought, that is kind of annihilation to matter. And my understanding is, too, that this is more what the organization supports. I'm not 100% sure on that, but that's been my understanding. And what helped me tremendously was Martha Wilcox. It straightened that out for me once and for all. So if any of you have any trouble understanding matter, her article, the one on scientific translations, and it begins, the following was given at an association meeting by Mrs. Wilcox. These things were taught her by Mrs. Eddy while she was in Mrs. Eddy's home. Therefore, it's straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak. And then in that article, she says, when I treat someone's heart, I do not destroy a material heart, but I understand that all there is to that individual's heart is the spiritual fact, the divine idea, the very presence and substance of spirit. The trouble with the individual who seems to have heart trouble is that he sees his heart as corresponding to his false material concept of heart. Then I need to change his concept of heart, but not his heart. We know everything exists perfect in him right now. It's a matter of seeing and acknowledging. And then also in her article, Supply Infinite Ideas, she writes, we as students must clearly understand that what appears right here and now as an object of sense is present right here and now as a spiritual idea and has the presence, the form, the color, the substance, and tangibility of spirit. You see, spirit possesses all those things. It's wonderful. And, you know, they say even if you pass on or whatever, you'll still have your body. It won't be bounded by material limitations, but people recognize, oh yeah, that's Chardell. it won't have the limitations of age or gravity or other things, but you will exist as a spiritual idea. And that is true for now, heaven on earth. We just need to work on this and see it more and more. Mm-hmm. And then I was also reminded of, and it's one of my most favorite stories, and it's from The Healer, and it is in the Praying and Watching to Bless All Children booklet. You remember the story of the mother who had the little girl with a boil. And when they went to see Mrs. Eddy, And when Mrs. Eddy looked at her children, she said she never felt anything quite like that before. And I wish I could make the world know what I saw when Mrs. Eddy looked at those children. It was a revelation to me. I saw for the first time the real mother love, and I knew that I did not have it. I had a strange, agonized sense of being absolutely cut off from the children. It is impossible to put into words what the uncovering of my own lack of the real mother love meant to me. As I turned in the procession and walked toward the line of trees in the front of the yard, there was a bird sitting on the limb of a tree, and I saw the same love poured out on that bird that I had seen flow from Mrs. Eddy to my children. I looked at the grass, the flowers, and there was the same love resting on them. It is difficult for me to put into words what I saw. This love was everywhere, like the light, but it was divine, not mere human affection. I looked at the people milling around on the lawn and saw it poured out on them. I thought of the various discords in this field, and I saw for the first time the absolute unreality of everything but this infinite love. It was not only everywhere present like the light, but it was an intelligent presence that spoke to me. And I find myself weeping as I walk back and forth under the trees, saying out loud, "Why did I never know you before? Why have I not known you always?" When we got back to the hotel, there was no boil on my child's head. That is the description, incredible description. Thank God we have these. And that is how we should feel toward what we call, quote, the things of matter. They're not. Let's feel that love and see the reality of it. And then the false sense of it will pass away, disappear into its native nothingness. So I'm so grateful. All of this is also in Mrs. Eddy's writings. It's in Questions and Answers. You can find it all there. And Martha Wilcox, we talked about Doris Henty. Martha Wilcox quotes Mrs. Eddy often, and she was directly taught by her. So this is the true sense. And to me, it well explains this very important watching point. Anyone else on that?
Well, Mary, it's always been very helpful for me to think of things sort of the same way we think of numbers or notes. And we've talked about it before, but we see them as infinite. We see them as unchangeable. And yet they are very substantial. And to think of things like, you know, our organs or whatever, there is only one, and it is spiritual, and it's infinite, and it's perfect. And although it's hard to see that with the physical senses, when we start realizing that, then we gain a bit of that spiritual insight that shows us that those things are infinite and perfect. So that's just always been helpful to me.
Thank you.
The number.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're infinite. They're individual. Thank you.
And they're substantial.
Substantial. Substance. Spirit. They exist. They can't be tampered with.
I think so long as we are never to make anything like money, body, food, whatever, bigger than God in our own consciousness, in our living. If we make those so important that they preoccupy us more than God does, then that is what is wrong. That is the belief of something apart from God that is wrong. Otherwise, no. God is the only source. God is the only source of good. So.
Thank you.
Never to make anything more important or bigger than he is.
These can become false gods, and they do. Mm-hmm. Money, food, all of this. They worship the golden egg instead of the goose, the giver of it, and it becomes false gods. And then we disobey the first commandment and we run into big trouble. You lose everything. Thank you, Florence.
Recently, God has revealed to me that I need to know that my body is God's body and no harm can come to it. And I cannot, there is no fear of pain, harm, limitation, disintegration, and that I need to more and more trust in the protections of the 91st Psalm.
Thank you.
Well, and when you say your body, you mean you, not a material body, but you are God's body. Yes.
Thank you for clarifying that. Absolutely. Not the material body. That, as I'm learning more and more, is nothing.
And remember, there are not two of you, a material body or a mortal and an immortal. There's only the one, and it's immortal. We see through a glass darkly.
Yeah, we just cast off the mistaken sense.
Yes. All right, Chardell.
Thank you.
Yes. Or did you want to say something else?
Well, you know, just that I'm learning. Slowly, I admit, but when you have a little bit of this understanding from here, you can start applying it to other things. That the one, there's only one of anything,
including weather.
Yeah, the weather, everything.
There's only, and that's a perfect expression of God.
All right, from the lesson sermon on Science and Health, number 6. As God is substance and man is the divine image and likeness, I found this, chapter 10 in Science of Being. And then it's page 268, if you ever want to go back. And this is from John, first epistle, that Mrs. Eddy put right in the top, the beginning. That which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked upon and our hands have handled, of the word of life, that which we have seen and heard declare we unto you, that ye also have fellowship with us, and truly our fellowship is with the Father and his Son, Jesus Christ. John, first epistle. Here I stand. I can do no other. So help me God. Amen. And that's Martin Luther. Then she has materialistic challenge. In the material world, thought has brought to light with great rapidity many useful wonders. With this activity have thought's swift pinions been rising towards the realm of the real and the spiritual cause of those lower things which give impulse to inquiry. Belief in a material basis from which may be deduced all rationality is slowly yielding to the idea of a metaphysical basis, looking away from matter to mind as the cause of every effect. Materialistic hypotheses challenge metaphysics to meet in final combat in this revolutionary period. Like the shepherd boy with his sling, woman goes forth to battle with Goliath.
Thank you. And if she hadn't done that, things would be pretty different. And we must be willing to do that too. Battle with the Goliath. You know, what did David say? Then said David to the Philistine, thou comest to me with a sword and a spear and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defiled. Our stand, my friends. I heard this week some things going on in our school, that school systems, this is the New Jersey public schools, that it's atrocious. Now, part of how this all works, just like they had the children of Israel, they were mesmerized into believing they couldn't do anything. It's part of the mesmerism. You have every reason why you can't do something. You can't, you know, you don't want to rock the boat. You don't want to embarrass your family. You don't want to do this. You don't want to do that. And so you stand immobilized and the era continues. You know, the Bible was taken out of our schools in the 60s by a Satanist. It was instigated by a Satanist. And that happens to be the truth. And ever since then, and before too, our school system has gotten corrupt with this wormwood, as C.S. Lewis calls it. And it is powerless to do anything unless we don't do anything. It has no power. How could it? It's not of God. So I'm so glad you brought that up. You know, Mrs. Eddy challenged this, and she was willing to. And David ran to meet Goliath. And, you know, when Mrs. Evans, when our church was attacked, she didn't roll over. She said, "The hell you say," and she fought back. You know, we didn't go over it a lot, but a few weeks ago we had that story about one wise man saved a city. Now, that was a story we were taught here a lot because there were so few of us. And frankly, there still aren't that many of us. But that's all it takes, one wise man. And all it takes is people to inaction, to let this era go on and on and on and on. And all the atrocities that are seem to be committed are because no one's taken action, because they are mesmerized by the error that they can't do anything. Mrs. Eddy, thank God, was not. I've told the story. So one wise man saved the city. And then the next paragraph goes that, and no one ever acknowledged or knew who he was. Well, and that's just fine. Who cares who gets credit for any of this? But he did. And thank God he did. I've told this story before. In high school, I knew someone who fought in Vietnam. He was in the 101st Airborne Division. He was a helicopter pilot. He got to know the Vietnamese people very well, and he would write letters to me. And even as a high school student, I was so struck with that, because he said the Vietnamese people, all of this goes back to religion often, that they were fatalistic. By that meaning, they didn't think they could get out of this war. They just rolled along with it. You know, it was just going to go on and on.
God's will.
God's will. And, you know, I recognize that in the Presbyterian religion, which my mother was, which I was raised in to some degree. It is. It's God's will for such and such to happen. And here comes Mrs. Eddy and says, this is not God's will. And at that time, I know I was full of what she calls timid conservatism that wouldn't think of challenging anything. But yeah. We write too, don't we? Mm-hmm. And we must. Mm-hmm. What has gone on in our school system is so atrocious. And this line of thought, the children were asked to write it all down. You know, when you write something down, it impresses in your mind. Mm-hmm. That is indoctrination. Now, wouldn't it be nice if they were told to write down the 91st Psalm? But instead, they were told to write down some ridiculous, I don't even want to talk about it, but it was rank error. And a lot of it has to do with sexuality and sensualism. And these children are too young for any of this. When I told Florence about it, all she could say is, why? And why is right. They should be learning math and spelling and other things. Yeah. And at one point, we did do that. Our school system did do that. Florence, were you going to speak?
No, I said it's not necessary. I mean, is it necessary, really?
Necessary.
Is that really necessary? I don't think so.
And then the children, they wonder why they're confused and upset and because of this sort of thing. So wherever you see it, wherever you hear it, you go forth like Goliath or David to Goliath and don't accept it. God will tell you what and how and what to do, but as long as we accept it, it will continue.
I had that situation at my school with my son where they had graphic novels, and it was very inappropriate. It was in, you know, his ninth grade, and some would say, well, he's old enough to deal with it. But what got me fired up was thinking about the other kids, and especially the girls in the class being exposed, because it had nudity and other aggressive things that were very disturbing. It was a reading assignment where, you know, here they could have done all these wonderful old books, literature, and they picked this. And I spoke up and I went to the board, and I was working with my practitioner, and it wasn't something I was used to, but I was able to do it because I was thinking of other children.
Yes.
And I just spoke up and I told the teacher, I told the principal, and then I went to the board and just said, you know, if I was a mother of a daughter, I would not want her exposed and discussing this in the classroom with boys there.
It was like pornography.
It was pornography, mm-hmm. Really.
And they tell you, you put that in people's heads, it's hard to get rid of. So where in the world does this get started and continuing?
Satanism.
It is. There's no other word for it.
And nothing happened. There was nothing done to my son or anything.
I'm sure not. Because when you stand for principal stands with you.
Yes.
They don't have a leg to stand on.
No.
But, so this is something that has crept in and not in, you know, our school systems, our education. That's why they're going to get rid of the Department of Education. They're going to have to burn it down and let it rise up based on God.
Yeah.
Hollywood, government, all these things in our country that have gotten wormwood in them.
Need to be cleaned out.
They need to be cleaned out, and it's going to take some strong action, and we all have to be ready to be like David. And how dare you defile our living God? How dare you? So, and I'm grateful for Mrs. Evans, because I certainly was not like this, but she certainly was. It used to scare the bejesus out of me. But I learned, and after a while, you know, there's something else that I turned to this week in Science and Health. On page 207, there are evil beliefs, often called evil spirits, but these evils are not spirit, for there is no evil in spirit. Because God is spirit, evil becomes more apparent and obnoxious as we advance spiritually until it disappears from our lives. And you will find that as you grow in spirit. Not only that, evil becomes more apparent and more obnoxious. Because truly, some of these things probably didn't bother me. Or as this week, people get desensitized. Oh, well, that's what they do. And then you pray and know it won't harm them. Well, you certainly should do that. And we certainly need to be doing that. But if there's any action to take, we should take it too.
I also spoke to my son about the book when we went through it.
Good. Yes.
Him.
Good. Then that's absolutely. And, you know, it won't affect your children or your grandchildren. Maybe they come, you know, you have a solid home or whatever. But what about some of the others?
Right.
And that's what Linda was saying. What about some of these others who do become confused?
The parents don't know that they have the books.
They don't even know it. They don't even know it. So what is it that, you know, all Era hopes for is that you'll...
Is that good men will do nothing.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That's a quote I've been wanting. The good men will do nothing. Yes, indeed. Go ahead.
I just said when I was raising Alexia, being a teacher, I guess, had its pluses and minuses because I was actively involved in the school system. And so I was able to see a lot of what was going on from the inside and had to stand up for a lot of things. And like you were talking about books and things that they were trying to give her to read. And there was one in particular in middle school that described a girl being raped in the book. And it was, I think she was like in sixth or seventh grade. And it was, I went up against it and was able to get it so that she didn't have to read the book as part of an assignment. But there is a saying that says, unless you become a strong influence in your child's life, other forces will. And they're out there doing those things, and you have to be constantly aware of it.
Thank you, Wendy. Yep. And yes, and definitely prayer. And prayer is sometimes the most effective thing we can do. But when there's action, when it comes right to your face, then action needs to be taken. I know in my day and with my school children, they were having sports and drama on Sunday mornings. Okay. And I went in up in arms over that. And my children were not allowed to do it. Were they happy with me? No, they were mad as they could be. But I didn't care. But you see, first they take the Bible out of the schools, and then they get where Sunday mornings you're playing soccer all day. And then they start indoctrinating them with this stuff that has no business in people's heads, frankly. Who thinks of this? The other thing, Jeremy tried to find out the source of this curriculum and what?
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, normally people are really proud to say, like, I did this, but it's not the case with all that stuff. It seems very hidden and, like, distributed among a whole bunch of academics. So.
And a lot of it is based in Marxism.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
It is. And a cause. They are taking our children's innocence and our you know, when I was the age 11, 12 or whatever, I was out playing Anne of Green Gables out in the park or something. I never even thought about any of this stuff. So anyway, we can change the tide and maybe it all had to come out from undercover. It's probably been operating. It's been going on forever. A lot of this stuff probably has. So it's come out to be healed. And as Mrs. Eddy says, why stand aghast at nothingness, which is true. We will not stand aghast at nothingness, but we will prove it to be nothingness.
I was going to share, this is what I was praying with, and I put it in our new children's watch booklet. And it's from Science and Health by Mrs. Eddy on page 62, quote, children should be allowed to remain children in knowledge and should become men and women only through growth and the understanding of man's higher nature.
Thank you. Thank you, Mrs. Eddy.
That's the proper education of children. It's not the Marxist communist indoctrination that causes them to lose their spiritual sense.
Right.
So we are in a warfare. Gary gives these testimonies often. We do know false systems are going to fail. Things are being overturned right now, shaking. And we have to, I mean, I'm feeling it more than ever, to stay with our science, our truth, work with Science and Health, the leaven of truth. It will bring pass what's needed. And all of this, it does need to be exposed. Thank God it is. Thank God this person told me about it. What was going on? Because sometimes I hear things and I said, well, that, I don't know, that can't really be true. But yes, this is firsthand information. So it will, we will know that the error goes back on itself and destroys itself. It can't harm a child. Child's innocence is preserved. They're God's children. And that booklet that Linda collected, all those wonderful watches, is invaluable. And yes, we do this work with joy wherever we see it, wherever we come in contact. We don't allow it to. Well, there's nothing
I can really do. Oh, sorry.
There's everything we can do. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to interject too that I've really come to have such a deeper appreciation of the chapter on marriage. And I will admittedly say that I used to kind of treat that chapter like the 13th floor of a building, you know, I kind of skip around it because it didn't always resonate with me, but I've gone back and read it several times in the past number of years. And so many things have really jumped out at me and I, especially in relation to children and thinking about what we're talking about today and what's trying to be taught in the schools. And hear Mrs. Eddy says very bluntly that chastity is the cement of civilization. And I believe she says you withdraw it. I forget what she says after that, but you know, it's like basically that's kind of the foundation of civilization. And when you are teaching the opposite, or you're teaching this hyper sexualization in school, you're going completely against that.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah, the next sentence is, without it, there is no stability in society, and without it, one cannot attain the science of life.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Exactly.
Thank you. That's a big price to pay. And wouldn't they like to strip our children of that? So, but we know this, and thank God. And even if there's just one wise man saved a city, even if there's just a few of us, we can change the tide, and we will, and we should. And whatever action or whatever we need to do, but certainly our prayers, because prayers are powerful. And boy, did I give this a going over. I had to. I couldn't not. And whoever the source is, wherever it is, whatever wickedness, it's going to destroy itself. And it's nobody talking about nothing to no one. So.
Yes. Dream logic.
Let's say
just dream logic. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's obviously written by people who are very confused and upset themselves, and
want people to be confused.
Yeah,
you know, there's some agenda there.
Yeah, there's some
and
agenda.
It's not for the good of
people. No.
The sad thing about human nature is it tries to manipulate and control others. Well, that's not Christian Science. God is the one in control.
Yes.
Good, a different sense of good controls, not somebody's uncontrolled willful impulse.
Thank you.
That's why we can do something about it, and we must.
Yes, and thank you for bringing up the chapter on marriage. Most important, I've heard other people tell me that too. Oh, that marriage, it's outdated or something, old-fashioned. No, it is not. People would like to think that, but so they could get away with doing whatever they want. But no, it isn't. So thank you. All right, Nancy, I'd like you to read the first two paragraphs that you submitted.
Yes, from 1937 College by Bicknell Young, where he writes about substance. Spirit means substance. Spiritual means substantial. In this light, it is important that we become more sure each day of actual substance. Spirit signifies self-existent substance. Nothing is ever destroyed. There is not a single material object in the universe. All is spiritual, principle, mind, soul, life are the cause of creation. And they are wholly mental, spiritual, tangible substance. And I believe he quoted that from Science and Health, 468.
Thank you. Yeah, in the 1937 college, Bicknell Young writes wonderful things about the synonyms, and this on substance is wonderful. Thank you, Nancy.
You're welcome.
It's very important that we have this right sense of substance. We do speak of it as our supply, which is true, and it's an abundant supply, as this lesson so brings out. You know, one of my favorite stories is that story of Elijah and the rain. And even though it was just a little teeny tiny thing, go seven times, keep looking for it. And someone this week, I loved it. She was, you know, having some problems in her home, but she said, I hear the sound of rain. I hear the sound of rain. And that's what we must do. You know, even though things seem to be tumultuous, I hear that sound. It's coming. It's going to come. It's such a beautiful story. And then also, of course, the beautiful story of the woman and what hast thou in the house? We'll talk about that more again. But right now, Jeremy, read the golden text.
Second King. And his allowance was a continual given him of the king, a daily rate for every day, all the days of his life.
Thank you. Now that was the last verse in 2 Kings was a statement that Mrs. Evans gave us anytime people were having trouble with supply. And Carrie sent a beautiful article called A Continual Allowance by Frances Gorell. And she writes, there are many people in the world today who are making their existence miserable by worrying about tomorrow and its demands. The children of Israel learned the lesson of seeking each day's supply through the gathering of the manna, which was provided from day by day. No useless hoarding of it, no mad rushing for it. It was allowed only the diligent, persistent work of gathering a sufficient quantity to meet the need of the day. There was the call for the daily work, for the bending of energies to provide for the daily needs. And so long as they needed this proof of God's care and provision and willingly accepted the conditions, just so long they were sustained. And then it quotes miscellaneous writings too, where God gives you his spiritual ideas and in turn they give you daily supplies. Never ask for tomorrow. It is enough that divine love is an ever-present help. And if you wait, never doubting, you will have all you need every moment. So, very often our troubles stem from our worrying, either regretting the past or worrying about the future. And that's why the importance of living in the present and knowing, is God, are you okay right now? Is God meeting your needs right now? Yes. Okay, well. No, that'll be true an hour from now, a day from now, a month from now, a year from now. But present, in the present, be in the present, be aware of what's going on now and be grateful for it. And you'll find you have all the substance and supply that you need.
The reliable now, as one of the...
Yes, the reliable now. Thank you.
Eternal now.
Yeah. Oh, is that what eternal now?
Eternal now, yeah.
Thank you. And in one of these articles, yes, what hast thou in the house? It speaks about we have two of them now. Carrie sent me one, a new one, and then there's the one we've had on the website by Helen Spangler. And it says, what hast thou in the house? This was a startling question Elisha asked of the widow, who would appeal to him for help with a creditor. And she said, I have nothing but a little pot of oil. But it was not inspired by a knowledge of God's omnipotence, of his infinite bounty and benevolence, by the realization of ever-present loving Father, Mother, God, but by a sense of widowhood and by the belief that her source of supply was dependent upon provision in a personal way and had been severed. It's a wonderful article. And that is so true, because that is what we think, that we have some personal supply, whether it's our business, a relative or something. And if that's been severed, then we're without supply. Well, there's no God in that. And you're also not seeing that the original source of supply, whether it was a job or a relative, was God, always will be God. And if you get clearly established in that way, you can never be without your supply. Because you're never without God, are you?
No.
You might think you're not, but it's not true.
Not true, yeah. Go ahead.
I told this as a testimony once that I had a sudden bill. I don't even remember what it was, but $2,000. I didn't have $2,000, but I remembered that Bible story. And I have some oil paintings by a local known artist from Pennsylvania. And I sold them. And he said, I'm sorry, I can't give you more. I can only give you $2,000. I said, I'll take
it. See, that's wonderful. And many people have those wonderful demonstrations like that. Now, I'm going to switch over to something I happen to have read this week, I found it very helpful. It was by an evangelist minister, but One of the things he says, I didn't know this, that April to the Jews is the month of miracles. But he goes on, he says that he talks about a word, it's called iamai. Iamai, it's a Greek word, and it means to heal, cure, make whole, free from errors. And he quotes first from Acts, how God anointed Jesus of Nazareth with the Holy Ghost and with power, who went about doing good and healing all that were oppressed of the devil, for God was with him. And then the word healing in this verse comes from the Greek word iamai. In Greek history, this word often has the meaning of a healing that occurs progressively over time. We typically assume that when people were healed through Jesus or the disciples, it was always instant. This word tells us that this wasn't necessarily the case. It can mean that healing or cure began at that moment and continued until the person was fully recovered. The word iamai is a very ancient word for healing, so ancient that it was used even in Homer's time. It mostly denoted healing that came to pass over a period of time. And it unmistakably tells us that there are many people who, from the moment they are touched by God's power, begin to mend or cure. In other words, this means that all healings are not instantaneous. Ta-da! Certain people are progressively restored to health over a period of time. They become better and better until they are completely cured. Now, we know in science that we're perfect now, and it's a matter of seeing it and acknowledging it. Perfect God, perfect man, perfect universe. But sometimes it takes us a while to see it. And I don't know, I thought this was wonderful because we always think every healing Jesus had was instantaneous. Well, this is saying no. And certainly mine have not been. And I've learned my greatest lesson because I've, over a period of time, I've learned. Gary gave a testimony about his healing taking time, and I was having, as most of you know, this winter something that didn't leave instantaneously, but I worked at it, and you learn many lessons from that. And it goes to follow what Mrs. Eddy says in Science and Health, that unselfishness, goodness, mercy, justice, health, holiness, love, the kingdom of heaven reign within us, and sin, disease, and death will diminish until they finally disappear. Diminish. You keep at it. And you don't give up on your healing. Oh, I didn't have it. It took a day. It took a month. It took a year. Whatever. No, you're being healed. If you are applying the truth, you are progressing, you are healing. Again, Mrs. Eddy says, the recuperative action of the system, when mentally sustained by truth, goes on naturally. Again, Science and Health. So never give up on your healing. All and anyone now, if you're getting treatment, or if you've been praying for yourself and maybe the results haven't come just the way you wanted them at just the timeline you've wanted them, that doesn't mean you're not being healed and it's not progressively happening.
The statement says,
in the meantime, you're gaining more faith, actually.
I'm sorry, what, Florence?
No, I said it took me a long time, but, you know, in the meantime, you're gaining more faith. I never really thought about that until looking back, like, how much more faith that lengthy thing gave me. Yeah.
Thank you. And also, you're learning a discipline, because if you have an instantaneous healing, well, then sometimes you just go on your way. But you have to work and discipline your thought day after day after day. You become that. You change. Mm-hmm. You put off the old man for the new.
Ruth? Yeah, because what you read, the recuperative action is mentally sustained. And that implies a conscious effort to do it consistently and steadily. And that's the discipline. And it may not be some of the ways we would choose, but this is God's way. Okay, are we going to be God's servant? And then which case we're more than gladly willing to mentally sustain it.
Thank you. That's it. So it is sustaining this truth, keeping with the truth. And it never fails to work. Sooner or later, you're going to get it.
And it helps us to be more compassionate for other people who are mid-struggle as well.
Most definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Most definitely.
There's that wonderful healing in Fruitage that talks about that woman who had that big growth. And I think it says where she was walking along and she was working with whatever she'd been reading. And it just came to her that she was healed. And she was just rejoicing and walking along and just knowing that she was healed. She was healed. And it says that she went home and told her landlady that she was healed. And he even says, you know, the landlady was a picture of amazement because the growth hadn't disappeared yet. But she just knew and kept rejoicing that she was healed. And after that, it then did disappear. But she even went home and told the landlady that she was healed before anything technically had started happening physically on her body, which I thought was just really cool.
Yes. Yep. All of this. You know, we're more and more, we're called on to be our own practitioners, our own physicians. We've got to grow in this science. It's enough of just having our personal problems being healed and going on to our whatever. This is world work. This is important. The cause of science, the cause of our nation and world is at stake. So everybody's shoulder to the plow. I'll read from Max Dunaway and then Gary will end. This one is called After You Have Suffered. The God of all grace, the apostle said, with a gentle smile, perhaps who can say, after that ye have suffered a while, make you perfect, establish, strengthen, settle you. But I have been appalled at what I first must do. After I've suffered, is there no other way to be perfect, established, strengthened, settled, Lord, I pray? I do not seek the way of suffering, but of ease, the pleasant path, which will avoid all inharmonies. But it is after we have suffered we are blessed, after we have learned that earth affords no rest, after we have turned away from sense to soul, then will we be perfect, strengthened, settled. Okay.
All right, and this is excerpt from an article entitled What Hast Thou in the House? By Henry Reimers. He writes, knowing that the prophet had power with God, the widow, whose husband had been one of the sons of the prophets, willingly and trustfully turned to him for help. What hast thou in the house? Of what does our thinking consist? Thoughts of care, anxiety, lack, discouragement, sickness, sorrow. False beliefs do not give comfort or hope. Nay, they cause discomfort and hopelessness. But the true thoughts do not bring comfort. They strengthen. They encourage. They are the pot of oil with which to fill the empty vessels. In Science and Health, with Key to the Scriptures, page 592, Mrs. Eddy defines oil as consecration, charity, gentleness, prayer, heavenly inspiration. The one pot of oil, through the demonstration of God's law, filled many empty vessels. So the good which may seem to be least in our thought will, by prayer, meditation, and ministry, unfold into new hopes, broader vision, freshness, health, joy, plenty, and higher ideals. Mrs. Eddy writes on page 15 of Science and Health, quote, Christians rejoice in secret beauty and bounty, hidden from the world, but known to God. Self-forgetfulness, purity, and affection are constant prayers. Practice, not profession, understanding, not belief, gain the ear and right hand of omnipotence, and they assuredly call down infinite blessings. End quote.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.